Hey, everybody. It's Mary Lou Tyler. This week's guest is a gentleman who we connected over the internet, over LinkedIn, and he's pretty awesome. His name is Andrew Priestley. He is a world-class coach, but he's also got a lot of other stuff going on. He's a chairman of a children's trust. He's an author. He's a publisher. The list goes on. Andrew, welcome to the podcast today.
Hey, what can I do? It's pretty amazing, isn't it?
It is. It is.
With an introduction like that, I'm thinking, what can't I do? I mean, it's like, I want to try anything. Yeah.
Well, yeah. You've done a lot of stuff speaks to, You know, it's amazing. It's what this profession allows us to do. You know, being in sales, being part of that whole environment allows us to morph into very different things. And you started out, correct me if I'm wrong, in the real estate vertical and became top notch there. But tell us about that story. What happened?
Well, it was funny because it depends on how far you want to go back. But originally I trained as a school teacher. Can you believe that?
I believe it.
Yeah, I trained as a school teacher and my majors were in reading psychology. And at the time, I joined a brand new university and I got interested in creating a newspaper for the university. And my skills in reading psychology helped incredibly there. And after about 10 years of teaching, I took long service leave and stupidly resigned to start my own publication. And that was probably the dumbest thing that I'd ever done in my life because I could not believe how hard it was. Because I had the technical skills, but I just didn't know how to sell. And so I was going out there and I was talking to the entertainment industry, the hospitality industry. You've got to imagine I'm going into nightclubs at 2 a.m. in the morning to try and sell them full-page newspaper advertising, which was just after 6 months, I was just absolutely burned out. So I left that and it was actually a clash of my values, Miralee. Have you ever experienced that with people that they do something and go, this doesn't align up with any of my values because I had a young family and I think, what am I doing hanging out in nightclubs with a young family? Mm-hmm. Crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy stuff. And so I actually took a bold decision. I shut down that newspaper. In actual fact, I tell people this, I was actually in competition with Rupert Murdoch at one point, and for the record, Rupert won, okay? So just so you know.
Yeah.
Okay. And he was a very interesting man to meet. He was incredibly interesting to meet. But he said, you're not going to win. I just loved his confidence. and he was correct because I was punching way above my weight, incredibly mm-hmm. so. I mean, we had a staff of 12 and he had a staff of like 153 and we were trying to do the same job as 153 people. But anyway, I took the bold step to shut down the paper, which I did before it mm-hmm. killed me. I was really burning out. And on the back of that, a friend of mine was selling Prestige Real Estate and he said, hey, why don't you come do Prestige Real Estate? And part of the training for that was you had to go and do firstly an agent and auctioneer course. And then after that, what you had to do was you had to do a sales course. And we were being taught, do you remember, you know, Tommy Hopkins?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Tom Hopkins. Okay. So The book, I think, was from memory, it was the Art of Selling or the Dark Art of Selling. It wasn't called the Dark Art of Selling, wasn't it? It was the Art of Selling. And so we were getting trained in Tommy Hopkins style training. And that was all the rage in Australia at the time. So I went and did this amazing course. I topped the course. I topped my alumni. Came out like almost like straight A's right across the whole lot there. And I got out into the field and none of it worked. Absolutely zero worked. and I was really, really confused. In fact, more than confused, I was devastated because you know, I've got a young family and I'm thinking, if this is going to work, what am I going to do? So it was actually more serious than it was just about me. It was I'm not selling anything.
Right.
And all this stuff was supposed to work. So I remember trying to do puppy dog closes on a $2 million property and wondering why the people thought backed away slowly, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't good. And I think and stop me if I'm talking too much because I love talking about sales, but in this particular situation I remember one day that the turning point for me was this lady came into the real estate office, and I wasn't on the top of the rotor that day, so I was just watching what was happening, and I saw outside the window this lady talking to the guy who was the head of the rotor and said, take me and show me a property. And they disappeared, and 5 minutes later, she came back and she was scowling and growling at this guy. I couldn't hear what they were saying. And he came in and he said an expletive and walked off. And about 15 minutes later, I went down to get a coffee and she was sitting there with her husband. And I said, hey, just out of interest, went out with my colleague, but you came back, you seemed pretty upset. What was going on? And she said, well, I told him that my husband has just had hip replacement surgery. And back then it was quite a serious operation. Mm-hmm. And I said, I don't want a two-story house and I don't want a sloping block. Guess what the first house he took us to was?
Oh.
Two-story house, sloping block.
Yeah.
Right? And I said, take us back, we're done. Right? And I said to her, we don't have any bungalows. We don't have any single-story dwellings on a flat block. It's waterfront land. It all leads down to the canals. It's waterfront, wet blocks. I said, even if your husband had a boat, he wouldn't be able to take the boat over the sandbar with a hip replacement because it's too bumpy. Mm-hmm. But I know someone about 20 miles down the road who you could buy a property from, and they'll look after you. Do you want a commission? No, don't worry about that. And so this lady went away, and a couple of days later, another lady came into the office and she said, I want to buy here because our kids want to go to school. It's a nice neighborhood. I said, look, if you live over here, you've got to drive 4 miles up to the junction, 2 miles along there, and 4 miles back to the school. You can see the school, so why don't you teach your kids to row a boat and then they can get to school really quickly? I said, you'd be better off living over there. Well, my sales manager went absolutely nuts, and the context was, you remember Glengarry, Glen Ross and Boiler Room, those movies?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what our sales rooms was like, right?
Okay.
So they used to have these rah-rah sessions and, you know, we will sell. And and you had to stand up on the desk with a pirate hat on and a sword and, you know, I am the best, you know. People will buy from me, that sort of stuff. We were going nuts, you know, this morning chanting. I thought, man, oh, man, I was losing the will to live listening to this stuff, right?
Right.
Anyway, the thing was, though, that it just didn't resonate at all. Any of this stuff resonated. And so what happened was I started this little quest to discover where did these ideas come from? Where did these mm-hmm. sales tools come from? The sequel to the lady story was about 4 months later, a man walked in and he said, is Andrew here? And somebody said, yeah, he's over there. And the guy said, he didn't look friendly. He said, you met my mother 3 months ago. I said, oh, my God, who's this? What have I done now? You know, how bad is this going to get, right? And he said, you didn't sell her a property on this estate. And I said, which lady was it? Oh, my dad's got the hip replacement. Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah, they had to work out really, really well. And my mum said, if you want an honest salesperson, go and see Andrew.
Hmm. Awesome.
And I sold 3 properties at that point, right, mm-hmm. to this guy because he was the head of an airline and he wanted to get a precinct for his CEOs, his C-suiters, and he bought 3 properties. And that gave me a lot of pause for thought, a lot of pause for really thinking it through. What just happened there? Mm-hmm. And I started to get referrals. So the lady who bought over with the school, she sent some friends over, her parents, for example, that they would love to live here. They don't have school kids. This guy you can trust.
Right.
You know, he didn't try and sell me anything. He was more concerned about, you know, it was a really good steer because I know parents who live over on the island and they say it's absolutely, you think if a mum drops her child off at that school, she's got 4 miles to the junction, 2 miles across, 4 miles down. And what's that add up to, 10 miles?
It's a lot.
So she's doing 20 miles twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
In a car.
So, right.
So that gave me a lot of thought. Then I started to think, where did these ideas come from? Where did the puppy dog clothes come from? Where did the hand grenades are? Which we don't talk about now. Do you get the idea? So I started to read, and at that point I left real estate. I went back to university. I did my industrial organizational psychology degree. Mm-hmm. And I got interested in doing factor analysis. I got interested in serious research. I actually picked up on, I love the reading psychology part, but I really wanted to go into abnormal psychology and look at that. And I started doing loads and loads of reading, and I eventually ended up reading right back to about the 1840s, 1860s, when they first started publishing, people started writing stuff about selling and sales. Mm-hmm. And fascinating. It was really fascinating what I found. I found about 256 factors that are involved with selling, which chunked down to about 10 things, and which pretty much closely follow a high-value multi-step sale now. You know, are you ready to sell? Have you got the knowledge? Do you know how to prospect? Can you build rapport? Can you qualify? Can you present? Can you close? Can you handle objections? Can you do the customer service? Can you do the admin? All that sort of stuff.
Now, let me ask you a question about that.
Yeah.
Has the internet changed any of that? Has the internet allowed us to bypass these behavioral cues because of the ability to know more about our prospects? Or is it, in your opinion, behavior is behavior, doesn't matter how many tools you throw at it, there's still a process that people go through to buy something or to feel comfortable to buy from you?
I got a feeling this is a loaded question because you're actually the expert on it. I've been reading your book and you know this question backwards. What's the answer?
The answer is what? I want to hear what you have to say.
One thing. It's a funny thing. The context that I'd probably provide when we talk mm-hmm. about the internet, and it links back to what I was saying before. The context here for me was, if I was to sum up selling from about the 1840s right through the 20th century, and in fact, I say to people worldwide, the world changed in 2004, right? Something happened in 2004 that just changed everything. Mm-hmm. And big cycles go in about 20 years span. So in 2004, we're only just coming out of that really big trend that happened in 2004. Do you know what it was?
No, what?
It was Facebook.
Okay.
See, and Facebook, prior to that, the year before that, was WordPress came out, and Zuckerberg got the idea, I could actually, I don't have to try too hard. I can use something like WordPress. And then the year later, YouTube came out, 2005. But mm-hmm. to get onto Facebook, you had to be in his alumni or you had to know somebody, and it just wasn't open to anyone. And he created this, if you like, this sense of it's you know, the little black book was back, and who do I know? And it was about relationships and you know, like and trust and those sort of things. Mm-hmm. And so if I can sum up selling from about 1840 right up to about 2004, the word I'd say is transacting. And, you know, a lot of times we say, look, buy something from me and I'll be your friend, but I want to sell you something, right? And so a lot of the tools that we were learning were how to get people to close and transact, but it was all down to transacting. Mm-hmm. But from 2004 onwards, I think what we did was we skipped a beat, in my opinion, in my experience. So can I validate this? I'm not sure. But my gut tells me, my heart tells me that you know, even back when I was selling real estate, you know, it's about the relational thing. People still, even if you make contact with them, still want to make a connection with you, still want to know a little bit about you. We know that some people won't buy unless they buy the salesperson. Other people have different motives for buying. And I think the internet certainly leverages that and gives us smarter intel, if you like. But I honestly think, too, if you talk about a big ticket, high-value sale, I still think it comes back to that very relational, you know, get to know me, get to understand my needs, you know, qualify me properly. Don't try and flog me something because you can or you have to. I don't know. I don't know if that answers it, but that's the sort of feeling. Yeah.
Yeah. There's this. A notion that behavior has changed because we hide behind electronics.
Yeah.
But I submit to you that, as you just said, it eventually will come down to the what I call belly-to-belly conversation,
yeah.
Meeting across the table from someone, they getting to know you, you getting to know them, you getting a good feel for how they roll, so to speak, and they getting a good feel of how you're going to transact their business with them and whether you are trustworthy. No amount of technology can help us with that. It has to be our humanness and our authenticity that gets us there. All these tools do is get us to the point where we can selectively choose, especially from an outreach perspective, who we want to have these conversations with, what's a good use of our time, and whether they've engaged enough with us so that the conversation makes sense right now in this moment to have that conversation with them.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think more so because we are shifting our perspective to more relational things where you know, LinkedIn is very much. I mean, I doubt if you would have had me on this podcast had we not chatted.
Correct. I mean, I didn't know you existed until I saw you on LinkedIn.
That's it. Yeah, and we reached out and we had a great chatter. We had a good chat and a good connection on particularly around sales and professionalism and things like that. But in the same thing, you know, everyone who appears in the book Sales Genius, which we've just put out there, every single one of those authors I spoke to. If it didn't feel right, I didn't want them in the book.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? Because I think I also, too, with selling, I take the obligation to my readers as a publisher really seriously. I don't want to put a sales book out there where people go, oh, yeah, it's just like everything else. I want people to look at it and go, that was really good. You know, I can trust these authors.
Let's transition now to the book. I mean, when we first met each other, this was a sort of like gleam in the eye, or it was something you were thinking about doing, and boom, it became actionable, which I love about you, that you have an idea, you put it into action. That is our motto as a outreach business development, is take something and put it into action. Well, you've done that. So tell us about this book. Tell us what happened.
Well, firstly, Mary Lou, I did an expression of interest on it first. I started talking to people about it. So it wasn't just I woke up one morning with an idea, let's do a book. I had the idea for a long time about, again, selling for me is a really, to me, an honourable profession, and it should be done with the utmost responsibility. You know, if you're looking at, I learned that through Prestige Real Estate. I didn't want to ever sell a house to somebody because I could, because I wanted to go back a year later or 2 years later and they'd say, Andrew, that was a great house. You know, you really did a good job for us. That was what I thought about deeply, right? I want to go back to people and look them in the eye and they say, I'm so glad you sold us this property, or that you were our agent, right? Mm-hmm. So I was talking to people, do you think this is an idea? There's a lot of sales books out there. I think if you Google search or if you do an Amazon search, there's hundreds and thousands of sales books out there. So how's this one going to be different? So I started talking to people and saying, what's your take on selling? Just tell me, you know, how are you different from whatever's out there? And then that's what turned into, and I came away thinking, God, that's genius what they're thinking. So Sales Genius was the name of the book on Amazon. And and so I put out a call to action on Facebook and I said, look, I'm thinking of writing a book because I'm a publisher. If you've got a take on selling, I'd love to, and you're interested in writing a short article, about 1,500 words. I didn't want it too long. Something you could read over a coffee. Would you like to participate? Well, I was deluged. Mm-hmm. And then it was a matter of going and talking to those people. Subsequently, we ended up with 20. I think they're just brilliant. We've got some amazing people in our first book, people who, you know, it does what it says on the tin. They're peak performers. Well, I think you're the number one, aren't you? You did the forward for the book in the end. How did I con you into doing the forward? Even
you simply by asking, Andrew.
That's exactly how it was. There was no conning. There was no spin, was there, Mary Lou? There was no spin.
No.
There were no inducements.
No. Just a simple request.
Yeah. Why did you say yes?
Why? Because I felt that it was a great project to get like-minded individuals, all from different walks of the sales pipeline itself, to give a comprehensive, short yet sweet overview and actionable book. I mean, it was just great to get everyone's opinions, and those who read the book can pick from the ones they like that resonate and apply. That's the biggest thing about this book, is it puts you in the position of action.
Yeah. And I think you've said something really, really important there, that there's a good cross-section of 20 people. Some of them you go, no, it's not me, but some, and I know this because I'm getting the feedback where people say, I love that article. I read the article and said, yeah, it was okay. But for some people, it's going to go, that's going to be a game changer for them. But it doesn't happen unless you actually take action on it. You're right. You're 100%.
Right.
If you don't actually do anything with it, what was the point, you know?
Exactly.
So the book's in,
The book is on Amazon,
It's on Amazon as a paperback. It's in 12 countries. It got number one in 5 categories in the UK and I think in Australia. And it got to, and America's a much bigger market, but I think it got to about number 4 or 5 in America.
Mm-hmm.
So, which to me, I was, you know, if I could get a sales book into the top 100, I'd be happy. If I could get it in the top 50, I'd be happy.
Right.
I mean, what's the feeling? I mean, you've done 2 bestsellers. What's it like to, when you look at it and you see the numbers racking up?
It's just wonderful. It's a great feeling to know that people are taking notice of your work, your body of work. The big thing for me, though, personally, is that they're taking action on it. And I would like to hear from people when they've applied something, some part of the book, which I've been hearing from a ton of people about that. But that's, to me, the most gratifying, not necessarily the number of sales, but the number of people who've applied the information within the book and can cite specifics as to what they did and what it meant to them to actually do that.
Yeah, and, you know, it may not be quantitative. It might be a thing like, and I had someone email me the other day who said, the thing I got out of reading the book was, shoot, actually sales is pretty good and I should be doing more of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I said, well, how's that translated? Oh, I've just been contacting people more.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But you could hear it in, you know, there's a difference between I should contact more people as opposed to, you know, I should contact more people.
Right.
You know, do you know my sales manager going right back to the Prestige, when he was looking, because we had the old leaderboard system, right, who's on top and blah, 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 and it was dog eat dog in the real estate game back then. I don't know if it's changed, but it certainly was then. But I was doing okay on the leaderboard, and my sales manager said, what are you doing? Because you're not doing what we do. What are you doing? And I said, well, you get your credit card out and I'll tell you exactly what I'm doing. Because it was a commission environment where everyone was poaching everybody's ideas. But I honestly thought, I don't think you're going to get it anyway. Just be genuine.
Mm-hmm.
You care about your client. You know, like try that one. See how that goes.
Listen to their requests. There's with the woman who needed a single story home for her husband.
Yeah.
Listen to that and let them know if you can or cannot make that adjustment. And like you did, you referred her out. I mean, that speaks volumes.
But you know, from a psychology point of view, I hate to say it, but there's a lot of sales techniques that actually work.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so you come to an ethical point where you say, I know I can use this technique on someone, but should I use this technique on someone? And to me, that lady for me was, I couldn't sell her a house. I couldn't say, look, you know, somehow massage the property so that they somehow liked it. I said, you know what, there's no properties that you want like that here.
Right.
It was just straight up and down. Nor did I want to take conjunct with her and take a split on the commission or anything like that. I wanted someone to look after her, because I know what it's like to do a sale. You want to, you really do earn those commissions, you know.
Exactly. It's that whole karma thing, though, and the law of reciprocity at work.
Yeah.
And I think that's what separates the really great salespeople from the not so great salespeople, is that they think longer term.
Yeah, I think so. And I think at the heart of it, you know, when I talk to people about sales and they talk about, you know, stunts and tricks and techniques and how can I use this and blah, 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 at the heart of it is a desire to manipulate others, and which, you know, to me, there's your problem right there, right? My approach has always been help somebody make an informed adult decision, a grown-up decision. If they can't do that, if the decision is I don't want to buy from you, well, I respect that.
Right, you know? Right. I think choosing your path, though, is the path of the high road is going to serve you in the long run, especially now since a lot of these tools that are available for reaching out and contacting more people are ubiquitous. They're lower cost, so it leaves more room for mass contact that's not a value. So if you put yourself on that higher road, I think you're going to win more often than not, just because you are spending the time to be more authentic.
I think it's a great point you make. And one of my colleagues is an incredibly bright young man who started out as a physicist, and he got into AI, and particularly with a focus on data mapping, decision mapping, and then using the data to make better decisions, right? However, the caveat there is we have to use this responsibly, because people can be manipulated, right? But you can also get the wrong customers for the wrong reasons as well. People who can buy from them, but they end up being a nightmare for you. So, I've sort of looked at that, but it goes back to what we said at the very start. It's still that relational thing.
Mm-hmm.
It still comes back to that, you know, and this is what I've learned through being a chair of a children's charity. You know, it's real people, real lives, real situations. You've got to really care about the person on the receiving end. And you can't fake that. I don't think you can. You know?
Not at all. Not at all.
I wanted to make a comment about your book. It's an amazing book.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. It's that's one of those books when you pick it up, you go, oh, God, this makes sense, of course. But you really, I like the fact that you haven't dumbed it down. You haven't dumbed down process and things like that. You've actually challenged people to really think about, okay, how does what I'm saying apply to what you're doing?
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's that. I hate it when you get a book which is do this and everything will be amazing. You're saying do the hard work and things will probably be amazing, which I love about the book.
And it's all about iterating. It's all, you know, being a process expert and spending my life in process. Yeah. It's about setting it up so that you're constantly iterating and improving. That's why it's called process improvement. And it just happens to be a sales process.
Yeah.
But, you know, my favorite chapter in the whole book is really about the prospect personas, because it's all about the people. Like you've been talking, like we've been talking about this whole time. It's all about who you're going to be sitting across the table from, either virtually or in real life, and solving real world problems that they have, but understanding what it is that motivates them, that engages them, that resonates with them, so that they want to have a conversation with you. And it's not really thinking outside the box. It's just understanding who they are, what activities they're doing, what jobs they're trying to accomplish, and they're frustrated trying to get them done.
Hey, tell me this. Why do you do this? Why do you sell?
I do it because I love interacting with people. I love finding out about people. That's why I'm a real good door opener as opposed to a door, you know, closing the business. Mm. That requires an expertise, a relationship type of expertise longer term, that I am not inherently possessive of. I am definitely one that loves to understand about people, who they are, what makes them tick, why this, why that, but not necessarily getting engaged and married and spending years together. That's not necessarily my area of...
This is a sales. It's not a therapy, is it? No, it's just a therapy, didn't we?
I always kid my, you know, because I've been married forever. It's like, that's probably, with that and my kids are the only things that I've done like forever. Everything else, I prefer the kind of love them and leave them approach, or love them and hand them off to somebody else approach.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really like understanding, you know, what is it that makes you tick? What are you struggling about? What do you love? What do you don't like as much? And how can we figure out if this is a good fit? Are we a good fit for one another? Is there something here we can work on together or not? Just, I mean, I'm totally okay with yes or no, go or no go.
I don't want
to be in limbo. I don't like being in limbo. And that's the quality of a business developer. We want outcomes.
We don't want the maybe zone.
No, we don't want the maybe land. No, we want yes or no, love us or hate us. We don't really, you know, either or. They both work.
And look, that's okay. And there's a couple of assumptions that sit under that. A lot of people do stupid stuff because the assumption is there's not enough business out there. I hate to say it, there's a lot of business out there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of work. There's a lot of money to be made out there for the right reasons. You know, one of the things when I was doing this research on the sales, There was a time when you had to be an end-to-end seller, where you had to have the readiness right through to the admin, through those 10, all those 10 key phases I talked about, which I identified. Mm-hmm. But what's happened, and you've probably noticed this, for example, when I get into some of my clients are in engineering, for example, and there are very strict laws that cover procurement and whatever, and they're not allowed to do things like a salesperson isn't allowed to do a close or an objections handling. All I can do is qualify and present, for example. Mm-hmm. And I went to a very large engineering firm recently, and they were doing closing techniques, and I was looking at their sales process, you know, briefly mapped their sales process, which pretty much templated under what I've looked at. Mm-hmm. And I said, why are they doing closing techniques? He's not allowed to do closing. And the people in the room were bored off their nut. But, you know, there was someone there doing closing techniques, which from the 80s, which I thought, No, they didn't work back then. Why do you think they'll work now? But you go into some really amazing organizations, and I've been working with a bank recently where they do that. Let's start a relationship. There are people who specialize in starting relationships, and then they hand it over into qualifying and making sure it's a brilliant fit. Mm-hmm. Right? They don't want your business if it's not a brilliant fit. You know, and exactly. They really say it has to be a brilliant fit. You can't get 4 out of 5. It's got to be 5 out of 5 criteria. And if mm-hmm. not, and that's just to start a conversation. If it's not, you're not a client for us, and we're not the provider for you. And that's a gutsy sort of thing to do. And then there's people who then handle the procurement and closing. And so you get, I think that's the other thing too. You don't necessarily have to put yourself under the pressure doing the whole end-to-end thing, really.
Right, but there's still 48% of my audience is still doing all roles, even though the predictable revenue book written in 2011 talks about separating those roles out. Culturally, some companies still in the U.S. want their reps to do all roles. So what I hope to do is at least say, okay, when you have your prospecting hat on, this is the workflow, this is the habit.
That's it.
It's like
you
morph yourself into a whole different type of person, which is unfortunate because it's very difficult. Do for one person. If we have the luxury to separate out the roles, yes, exactly what you're saying. There are people who specialize in dating and getting people excited about what they have. Then they turn them over to somebody else who qualifies them, gets the teams involved, gets down to the nitty-gritty of design specification, et cetera, et cetera. And then there are people who, once they become a client, they manage them, they keep that relationship going with cross-sell, upsell. But yes, that's the ideal in a lot of these more complex, where there's a multi-stakeholder type of environment. Yeah. It's really a way to go. But a lot of people don't do that. And a lot of people won't do that until they see some consistency in the top of funnel.
Yeah, yeah. So my larger clients are sort of very much what you just described there. But, you know, SME clients, yeah, they do have to do the whole end-to-end thing. They've got to go and prospect and then go and meet and present, qualify and close and handle objections, et cetera, and write the order up and then maintain the relationship afterwards. They've got to do all of that stuff, yeah. And we've got Jackie Jarvis, for example, who is one of the authors here. She's talking about authenticity, but is a big speaker on that. And one of your colleagues in the book too, Alison, same sort of thing. It's how do you manage those relationships? And Brits are very relational. I'm an Aussie, but I live in the UK, and Brits are incredibly relational. You know, they get very, very sensitive if they upset somebody. You know, they don't want to do that. So they tend to manage those relationships very well. So, you know, I like that aspect of it. It's always resonated with me. You know, I don't want to sell somebody something and then have them turn around 2 days later or 2 years later and say, I'm not happy. And you sold us a pup, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Although that pup you've got, I wouldn't mind buying that one. Look at that dog of yours.
Larry the dog is on our screens right now, whoever's listening.
There's this Larry Labrador, the eyes of that dog, I'm thinking, if you just walked into a meeting with that dog, right, it's like, I don't know whether the dog's got your eyes or the other way around, but I mean, it's sort of like, and the smile, they've both got the matching smiles, folks, if you can see this. It's just a classic photo of this Labrador. We go, oh, look, just here's, give me a contract. Let me sign something so I can just pat that dog, you know.
Yes, he's, for those of you listening, Larry is a rescue dog that we picked up and adopted. He was supposed to be a PTSD service dog, but unfortunately he became the dog with PTSD.
Oh, no.
So we ended up adopting him, and he has goldfish eyes almost. He's got those bug eyes. He's very cute, very cute.
Yeah, I love labs. I love Labradors. They're just lovely, aren't they?
Yeah. So the book here is Sales Genius 1, 20 Top Sales Professionals Share Their Secrets. Andrew Priestley is the publisher. Get it on Amazon. I'll put it in the notes so that people have an easy link to get to that. The Kindle version is very affordable, and it's got some great tips for you to start activating into your sales process and hit the ground running. Andrew, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. Very much appreciated
having you on.
Yeah. Look, and listen, thank you for your time too. I love your book, and you should do a plug for your book too. If you haven't picked up Mary Lou's book, you need to rush to the internet straight away, and just don't think about anything else. Just get the credit card out and buy that book. And then destroy it with a highlighter. Read it. The good thing about our book is everybody's contact details in there. Mm-hmm. They want you to contact them. They want you to say, starter, just if they can help you, they'll help you. So it's not, they'll try and flog you something as well, but they're really nice people. I take that back. They're really good people who just want to help, and they've shared generously. And your book is just like gold. It's pure gold. You know, if you take the time to read it and think about it, brilliant book. Yeah. Thanks for having me as a guest. I appreciate it.
Loved having you. Talk soon.